All right, I got Vin Infante on the podcast today. He is a therapist, a mentor, and a coach. Vin, welcome to the show, brother.
Yo, what's up, brother?
Dude, great to have you. I'm excited to jump into your story because a lot of people, I think they're going to find just your the progression of where you started and where you are now. But my understanding is, you know, you were you went to school at an early age. At 23 years old, you became a therapist. Then you transitioned at the craziest time in the world, in the pandemic of all times. You decided, I want to become a New York firefighter. You did that, and then you became a coach. Dude, talk to us about how these transitions kind of occurred in your life and why you're doing what you're doing now.
Sure. Well, at least for the fire department, I didn't necessarily choose to become a firefighter during the pandemic. I was in the academy and they were like, hey, here's what we got going on. Good luck. So it's been interesting. I like to joke around, but it's also very true is that I've had three careers in 3 years because I couldn't really make up my mind. And everything has been a journey that has been finding ways to support people. And I think it's really interesting because I don't know if any of your listeners might feel stuck or feel like what they're currently doing is not necessarily what they'd love to do. And maybe they want to do something else. However, for me, when I looked at it is I wanted to help people and I didn't have an attachment to how I showed up to help people, but I wanted to find a fit that made me feel fulfilled when I helped people. And so a lot of times people get caught, and I believe this is a really important point to bring home for at least some of your listeners perhaps, is that when I thought about, man, I went to college for 6 years, I got this license, I've worked in every setting over the course of 10 years, and now I'm about to quit all of that and become a firefighter. And then after I did all that, which was the training and the academy and the pandemic, I was like, man, I'm going to quit this and I'm going to go become an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and people had to be saying like, Vin, you're throwing your life away. I'm sure your parents were like, Vincenzo, what are you doing? You're throwing your life away. 6 year degree. You want to become a firefighter? Are you crazy?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's always been my dream to be a firefighter ever since I was a kid. Because I think every boy wants to become a firefighter or a cop or an army soldier or, I don't know, what's the big one? Astronaut, right? Who, like, what boy in their childhood, maybe nowadays, I think now every boy probably wants to be a YouTuber or a streamer. But yeah, back in our day, before the internet was a thing, we wanted to be something that we believed was heroic and exciting.
These guys are the real life superheroes. And I think there was something familiar with that. And if like, how could I be a superhero in real life? Well, firefighter or police officer was a pretty good career.
Yeah. I mean, you think about what's the closest thing to a superhero? Well, anyone who runs into danger while everybody else is running away from danger. And that's a real life superhero. And that's why as a kid, I think it entices us because at least for boys, I can't really speak about what it's like growing up as a little girl.
But Although you have one now, Vin, so you can, you know, you're raising one. So that'll be fun.
I'll learn a little bit, but yeah. I know for me and most of the guys growing up as a kid is you want to be heroic. We would glorify the aspect of being somebody that was admired because of the fact that we were doing something that was difficult. I mean, that's what it was like growing up as kids for us. I'm sure you had the same ideologies. And
I'm a third, and you know my story, I was a third generation police officer. And so, yeah.
All right. So it's, we all want that. And my family was to a very high degree accepting of that because I had always wanted to become a firefighter. And in fact, when I was younger, I want to say about fifth grade, so it was probably 10, you know, everybody was always asking like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because at 10 years old, now they think you have the world figured out. And it's like, you know what you want to be because you're 10 now. It's like, yeah, I guess. But it's funny because when I was 10, I would always tell people I wanted to be a therapist and a firefighter. And so it was already there. It was already the premonition of I'm going to do both. And everybody would always be like, oh, you're going to be a therapist for firefighters? That's so honorable. And I'd be like, no, I'm going to be a therapist and a firefighter. And people would be like, oh, wow, that's so ambitious. Like, I don't know if you'll be able to do both. You might have to pick one. And people would always kind of tell you, even as a kid, right, to do less. And it's very interesting because you understand it as, or at least I understand it as, they're not telling me what my limitations are. They're telling me what their limitations are. And people won't intend negatively to impact your life, but they will based on their beliefs.
Wow. That's huge. Go back and rewind that one. That's a good one. Okay. So I'm very curious because you have this, again, 6-year degree, you're psychotherapist, right? That's the correct terminology, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Psychotherapist. And then you scrap all that and you become a coach. I want to know right now, here and now, Ben, why does therapy not work?
It works for, I want to say it works for some people, but I don't really know if that's even the right terminology. It works and it doesn't, like everything, right? So let's talk about why I got out of doing traditional therapy, because I don't believe in it anymore. But I got out of it because I don't believe that it's helping people in the greatest capacity that it possibly could. I think modern psychotherapy has become very much about the conscious mind. And if you look at the best modalities in psychotherapy or therapy in general that actually help people, they deal very heavily with the subconscious mind. Modern day psychotherapy has taken on a lot of talk therapy, which isn't bad. Talk therapy is like good in a dosage. And when I say it's good in a dosage, I mean talk therapy will create a form of awareness, but that is not really hitting into the subconscious. That's like, hey, Evan, you know, you did this thing. Sorry, Joel. It's like, hey, Joel, you did this thing. Why do you think you did that? And then we could come to the conclusion, well, I did that because, you know, my father hit me as a kid. And so because my dad hit me, whenever I see a man raise his hand to me, I immediately go to punch him in the face to defend myself. And it's like, okay, interesting. So what could we do going forward? Right. And that's kind of addressing the problem, but it's not going deeper. It's not about changing the experience. It's not about impacting the emotional effects that you've had as a child and then shifting that so you don't deal with them as an adult. And a lot of regular nowadays modern therapy is really just hitting on that conscious mind. But we know in our field, in our industry, is that you don't change by impacting the conscious mind. You change by impacting the subconscious mind. So I've come to believe that modern day therapy is failing a lot of people because it just is heavily focused on the consciousness. And that's not really what's going to create results for everybody.
Yeah, really interesting. And I just read a new book called Bad Therapy, Why Our Kids Are Not Growing Up. I'm not sure if you've read that one. Really interesting, though, is that it talks about this idea of what you're talking about and that this therapy is we're geared towards emotional resilience, social emotional skills for kids. Daniel Siegel, a lot of his work is based on neuroscience. And there's a lot that I agree with. And maybe there's things I'm not all the way in on, but it's really interesting because she's making an argument that we're so focused on talking about how are you feeling, Vin? How are you feeling? And you and I know, as you just said, that if you ask me on a random any time of the day, 9 out of 10 times, I'm not happy. I'm probably in a bad mood because 95% of our thoughts are governed by the past. And so our brain is hardwired to look for what's wrong. And so she's kind of in general is making an argument from the book that if we keep asking kids how they're feeling, they're probably going to tell you they're sad. And then that immediately leads a therapist or a doctor to say, well, you're depressed, you're anxious, put this person on meds at like 4 years old. And it's just ridiculous. And so I see both sides, like you said. So I think that's really a good take on how you look at it.
Well, it's also interesting too, because I believe that a lot, you know, I was having this conversation the other day. I was out at an event and it was so funny, actually. I didn't even get to tell this story to my girl yet. I thought she would have got a laugh out of it, but I'll tell you and your listeners. So I was out at this event and we're at like this big table because it's like this VIP dinner thing that I was at. And I was talking to the person next to me and I'm just super focused on them. But then when I like sit back for a second, because I was going to grab some of my food, I looked and I noticed like everybody on the other side of the table was staring at me. So I had like eight people just staring, listening to me, and not in a bad way. Like they were all really like enwrapped in our conversation and they wanted to be a part of it. And some of them did jump in and give feedback. And it was funny because we were really talking about how there's this part of the brain. I can't remember the specific technical term for it. And I also do a lot of research and learning about neuroscience because I believe it is extremely important to understand how the brain works so that you can actually help people create lasting change in their life. And to be honest, this is not something that they teach you when you're going to school to become a therapist or even a coach. Like, this is something you have to seek out on your own. But there's this piece of the brain that enlarges or shrinks based on how many difficult things you do. And when you do these difficult things, it actually gives you this capability and a bigger and greater capacity to work to elevate your life, to actually achieve goals, to accomplish things, to really become more and more successful. And, anybody who's listening, again, forgive me for not knowing the technical terms, but please do your own research because you also should want to understand how the brain works if you want to change your life. And so we were just talking about all of these different ways that adversity builds your life. If you have no adversity, you're actually not going to grow. So much so that you start shrinking your capacities every time you take an easier route or you do something that's easy. Interestingly enough, the research that they found on this part of the brain also shows that if something that was previously hard becomes something that you look forward to and it's no longer viewed as difficult or hard, it stops growing that part of the brain. Like it stops giving you that enhanced capacity. So like ice baths, if you're somebody who hates ice baths and you start doing them every day, now you love ice baths and you're like, oh, I can't wait to get in my ice bath. It's no longer a difficult task and it stops enhancing that part of the brain, which is so fascinating.
Yeah, that is. And a great book, Michael Easter wrote Comfort Crisis, kind of talking in what you're, yeah, I think we're very comfortable beings. And so if we can create a little hormesis in our life, a little bit of good stress, that's a positive thing. But I had no idea that if it peaks out, it essentially plateaus. So it sounds like you almost have to continue to challenge yourself and look for new discomforts to push yourself in. And it's actually really a positive thing now. You can actually reframe that. I can reframe that in my life. Hey, Joel, what's the next tough thing? Because you're going to grow and that's how you want to keep expanding. Curious for you, what do you do on a regular basis to look for discomfort?
I just look at my life. There's
Are you
always,
looking at having another kid, Vin? I'm going to challenge you on that one. How about
yeah,
that?
no, my girl really wants another kid.
Yeah.
And if we leave that sentence alone where it is, you could understand what my thought is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little discomfort for you. But yeah, no, anything. I mean, are you a big cold plunge guy? I'm just curious for discomfort. Is there anything that you try to do or that you seek? And I know some people every 6 weeks they look for like a new challenge, whether it's running a marathon or just training in a different way. Is there anything that, I mean, it could even be doing a new coaching program. I have no idea, but is there anything that you look for and you seek out that discomfort?
I think discomfort finds me, man. You live a life big enough, trust me, you don't have to seek discomfort. That's what I've come to find. I have so many things in my life that I could choose that are uncomfortable. Like I think I live in discomfort so much that I actually do seek out comfort a good bit. Now, a lot of people tend to live the opposite. They live in so much comfort that they have to seek out discomfort. I live in so much discomfort, I have to seek out comfort. And so it's very interesting. I mean, but the interesting part of that, or the switch of that, is because of the life that I live. And without continuously repeating myself, I'll tell a little about what it is. So for one, is I have a lot of ambition. I want to achieve greatly in this world. I challenge myself with my body, for instance. I don't have my dream body. So there's discomfort in that because it requires a specific type of eating, sleep style, drinking a ton of water that, I mean, I really forget to drink water, right? Like, so there's always something to do for my body. Then as a father, there's the ideal or the desire to raise my daughter to be a certain way. There's the discomfort of having to be a certain way to raise her a certain way. Like, maybe, I don't know, maybe I want to let her watch a little extra TV, but I'm also working on being a mindful parent. So I don't want her to be addicted to TV and television, games and the phone and all this other crap. So I refuse to buy her an iPad. So we also have discomfort because I refuse to be an iPad parent where we're out at dinner And it's so freaking annoying that I don't even want to take her to dinner because I refuse to give her a phone or buy her an iPad. And then let's look at my job. Well, right now the discomfort is I'm trying to figure out marketing and lead gen. So I'm being challenged to really work into my copy and niche out the audience and then create the VSLs and then work with an ad manager. So there's that. And then I just took over a startup and now it's like, okay, well, the startup was failing. That's why I took it over because I'm going to try and save it. Now I got to redo the CRMs. I got to redo the client acquisition. I got to redo how we would onboard people. I got to redo the program entirely. I have to update investors. Now I have a laundromat. There's issues there. I have another company that we do backend and CRM systems. It's called Nexus Innovations. And we're trying to figure out all the workflows and the automations and the drip campaigns. There is no shortage of discomfort in my life. So I don't do cold plunges. I don't do cold showers. I don't meditate. I don't sit here and journal. I think I don't need any of that shit, but not that I don't need it. I don't need it in the sense that I have enough discomfort and I will utilize these tools in ways like, for instance, my workouts are actually my meditation periods. I don't sit still, but I meditate when I work out. Like I could work out for 20 minutes with music in my ears, not know what song I'm on because I've been so deep in thought. And then I've got ideas and I write them down and I write things down as they come to me or I'll write things down as needed. And then when I think about like, oh, how do you have a write down a gratitude practice? No, I have a gratitude practice where I'm present with my family every day. Every morning, I don't start client calls or meetings or anything until 11 a.m. This morning, I was sitting down. I had breakfast with my daughter. I was hanging out with her and just thinking about how lucky I am that I get to spend so much time with my family. And so for me and to anyone listening, there's no right or wrong way to do life. There are tools, there are aspects of it, there are things you could learn, there's information, but the biggest thing is you need to figure out what's for you. And for years, I used to wake up and journal and gratitude and the YouTube video and the cold shower and the face and the cold face and the heavy workout and the run and the sunlight and the feet barefoot on the grass. And I would do all this shit. And I'm like, why am I spending 2.5 to 3 hours every morning with a freaking morning routine? I have so much shit I could be doing. And then I was just like, you know what? I go to the gym. I get a kick-ass workout. That's where I meditate. I spend time with my family. I reflect on my life almost every day. I journal when I need to. And I honestly love cold plunges, so it wouldn't be a difficult thing for me either. So there's so many ways, man, and I'm sure that was a long-winded answer, but there's so many ways that you can challenge yourself in your life, even if it's just like how you show up powerfully as a father or a friend or whoever the heck you are.
I love that you said that because, you know, we're so entrenched in the culture of David Goggins. If you're not waking up 4 a.m., you're a piece of crap. And I was talking to my wife just about this idea that you just expressed beautifully. And I've been there many times in my life where I'm like, oh, Vin is waking up at 4 a.m. and he's a high achiever. I'm going to do the same thing. Vin's taking cold plunges. I'm going to do the same thing because I want to be a high achiever. But what I started to realize, and I think what you're touching on, it's like, I've always had a lot of ambition like you. I don't need to be motivated. There's probably 90% of the world, they need David Goggins to kick their ass and get them out of bed and go do a cold plunge because they're on the couch. But I've instilled in ingrained habits over the years that are just so ingrained in me. It would be hard for me not to do these things. So I don't need a 2-hour practice of meditation and cold plunges. I like doing those things, but I don't need to rock my world, if you will, because I'm lazy. I'm not lazy. I got a lot of things. And I think if anybody's listening, you want to be uncomfortable, become an entrepreneur like Vin and I. You'll be very uncomfortable for a long time. So I love that.
Yeah. 100%. You know, and one last thing I want to add to that, because I think you brought up a great point too, is that one thing I've come to see a high performer as is somebody who's just really aware. Mm. Like, the other day, for instance, and I forgot what happened. I think my schedule always gets messed up whenever I have like a travel event or something. And so I had this conference maybe about a month ago. And this conference was big for me, man. I spoke in front of 500 people. I had a booth there. I was like preparing for it. And then after every day after the conference, and the conference was every day from like 8, 9 a.m. until like 10 p.m. at night or 11 p.m. at night. And then after that, you would go network, and there was a bar in the lodge that we were at, and everybody was there. And then you're in the bar until like 1 a.m. and then you're waking up at 7 because there's an 8 o'clock thing to do. And so that stuff really wore me out. And I'm also not a super extroverted person. So I like towards the end of it, I was hating every minute of it and wanted to go home being fully honest. Cause that's not what I enjoy. And yet I would push myself and I did it. And then when we got home, I found that I was waking up late because I like to wake up early. Like I like being up at 5 a.m. I think it's really great. I mean, the other day I was up at 3:30 a.m. and I was working from 3:30 until like 8. And that was so awesome. I got 5 hours of work done. I did a longer day than most people. And it was already like 8:30 a.m. And so I love that. Right. And I for a little while was going to bed at 3 a.m. and I was staying up late. And I was scrolling social media a little bit because sometimes after those big events, I get caught up and like, I need to deload a little, but the deload a little turns into the deload a lot where you're staying up late and then you're on your electronics and then maybe you're fucking off on social media or whatever the case is. And that was what I was doing. And this is where it's important to have awareness is because I realized it. I'm like, man, I'm not getting as much work done as I'd like to right now. I'm very comfortable. I'm spending a lot of time on social media. I'm going to bed later than I like to. Like my right now, my lifestyle isn't a reflection of who I believe myself to be. So I need to change this. And then I deleted all of my social medias off my phone. I deleted every type of video game that I was playing. And I just, even though I couldn't sleep because now I'm so used to going to bed at 3 a.m., I forced myself to lay in bed at 11 or 10. And even though I didn't sleep that night, I just woke up the next day at like 4 a.m. and I went through the day and I worked and I was a little tired and was what it was. And then boom, got my schedule back. So sometimes people create habits and routines and they fall out of them, but they don't have the honesty or the awareness to get themselves back into it. So if there's anything I will say that people should develop is a routine that is aligned to who they want to be and who they believe themselves to be. Because if you understand that, even if you fall off of it, which happens to all of us, myself included, and probably you people listening, is you can get yourself back to it. Because that's what matters. I tell people all the time, the difference between a high performer and a low performer is that a high performer is aware of when they're messing up and they stop. A low performer will keep messing up, wondering why they keep messing up, not getting to the honesty and not doing anything to change it, and then frustrated that their life isn't improving, or I don't get it. I was doing so great 2 months ago. What changed? And like, they're confused. Like, you changed, man. So create your awareness, become a high performer.
So good. So good. I wanted to go back on something that we talked about earlier, which was transitions. And you made multiple transitions.
Oh yeah.
And you're playing at the highest level of the game right now. And I know a lot of people just like us that were first responders and they want to make transitions out of life. And what I see happen a lot for them is a couple of things. Number one is imposter syndrome and self-doubt. And then the other thing is, well, I think it's coupled with that. It's the identity. Like, who am I to be an entrepreneur? I've been a police officer for 15 years. And I know you work with a lot of entrepreneurs and executives that are creating new identities in their culture scape. How do you help clients navigate these life transitions and help them find their true calling?
If you have never rode a bike and you go and you try to get on a bike and you really want to ride one, are you going to feel stupid for trying to ride a bike?
Every single time.
Okay. Are you going to feel like you should never be able to ride a bike because you've never rode one before?
If you're asking, I'm going to tell you initially, I am. I'm going to say I'm not good enough. I have, you know, if I go back and I've done a lot of work, Vin, but I would tell you I have a lot of self-worth issues. Like, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I would actually, my self-talk initially be like, I don't know if I'm good enough to be able to ride this bike.
But then the question would be, so how could you acquire the skills to ride a bike if you're not willing to get on it?
Take messy action. That's the only answer.
Of course. But that's kind of the silliest part of imposter syndrome, right? It doesn't actually make sense. if you use the analogy of riding a bike, you have to think about it. Like, you've never rode a bike. You just know you'd like to ride one. But you also can't expect to know how to ride a bike if you've never rode one. So it's like, okay, do we sit here and say I should never ride a bike because I've never rode one? Or do we sit here and say, well, it kind of makes sense that I don't know how to ride a bike because I've never been on it. So maybe I should try it. And maybe there's ways that I could look to, I don't know, learn it. Maybe there's training wheels. Perhaps there's a YouTube video that could show me how to ride a bike. I could admit knowing the fact that I have no idea about how to ride a bike, but can I learn? Can I figure it out? Can I give it a try? Is there a desire for me to ride a bike? Is there a commitment to start and a commitment to finish? These are the things that I believe help people overcome imposter syndrome, is understanding that imposter syndrome doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. If you sit here and you really think about it, it never makes any sense, because anytime you try something, you don't know what you're doing, unless you actually do know what you're doing and now you're trying it, right? But even that, how did you learn? Well, you did it at one point. Now, here's something that's really cool. So I'll even give a little exercise to your listeners. For anybody who's listening, I want you to think back to one of your biggest initial limiting beliefs or one of your biggest initial thoughts that you are not capable or you're not worthy. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about where you first developed that belief. But the most interesting thing that you might find if you actually go all the way back to that moment is that it was never your limiting belief. We do not have limiting beliefs about ourselves. We develop them because somebody has given it to us and we have adopted it as our own. Now, that's really interesting, because as a kid, if you think about this, now all of you listeners, stay with me. Go back to your childhood when you were like 1 or 1.5, depending on when you first started walking. How come you fell 1,000 times, got hurt, got cuts, got bruises, banged your jaw, banged your chin, whatever it was, and you didn't stop walking? It's not in the human spirit to quit. It's not in the human spirit to believe that you're not good enough. When you're a child, you are pure human spirit. And what also happens is your parents are probably there encouraging you. In fact, they're probably fascinated. Like, oh my God, look at Joel. He's freaking walking. And then you fall. And they're like, that's okay, son. Get up. You can do it. And then you get up and you're like, ha. And then you fall again. And then maybe you all laugh and you get up and you keep trying. Your father probably never sat there and told you, Joel, what? Stop. You're embarrassing the entire family. You look like an idiot. You're wobbly. You keep falling. You're not a walker, son. Just sit down. We'll get you a wheelchair. Call it quits. You don't know how to walk. You can't do this. You're awful. Don't do it. It never happened that way. And why? Because we only know to keep trying. However, at some point in your life, somebody told you, somebody you believed in, somebody you liked, somebody you knew, somebody you trusted, somebody you looked up to, somebody you loved, told you that you were not good enough at something. Or maybe they made a remark about, well, that sounded stupid, Joel. You shouldn't talk like that. Or, Joel, what are you doing, man? You look ridiculous. It's like, I look ridiculous. Oh, my. Who do you look ridiculous to? The person that said you look ridiculous? Or yourself? And so all of our limiting beliefs are actually formed based on somebody else's opinion of us that we've adopted. Now, here's something that you and your listeners could do, Joel, or anybody listening. This is a technique we use in NLP to actually change people's experiences. If you were to take your biggest limiting belief and you were to imagine, now create like this scenario where you close your eyes and you were to imagine that whoever is telling you this limiting belief, maybe it was your father or somebody you loved or respected, and now see them as this ridiculous looking creature, like see them as Mickey Mouse if you have to. Give them a big silly voice and imagine that they're telling you your biggest limiting belief, which might be you're not good enough. But what if you heard it like this? And bear with me, everybody. I'm about to do something stupid, but you'll love it. What if the biggest limiting belief was you hear these words in your head that said you're not good enough, and you hear, you're not good enough. You're a loser. Huh? Right now, Joel's laughing for any of you that can't see this on video. And that's what's so funny, is you can actually shape and create a new experience with the same words. Now, notice Joel's laughing at the fact that I said you're not good enough. But Joel constantly believes he's not good enough. And yet for this, he's laughing. So if he could laugh at that, now the question is, does that belief have power over you? And the answer is going to be no, because it's now funny. You've made fun of it. It seems stupid, and you actually can't take it as truth. Limiting beliefs become detrimental when we hear them in our own voice. When you hear yourself say you're not good enough, it sounds real. When you hear Mickey Mouse say it, it sounds ridiculous. And now it actually has no power over you. So I encourage you listeners to morph your beliefs. Morph them in the sense like give it a new voice, give it a new visual, make it ridiculous, make it as stupid or funny as you can make it. Practice that in your mind, practice that in your life, and watch your limiting beliefs literally start melting away. I mean, that's a really powerful NLP trick. And for those of you that are not familiar, NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, where it actually goes in and reprograms your subconscious mind. And so that's one of your best ways that you could actually start changing beliefs, overcome imposter syndrome, realize that you are not your beliefs either. One thing that I've learned is that we don't actually create information. We take it in and we make sense of it. That's another really cool concept, isn't it? So your limiting beliefs are just data that you've taken in. You've never actually believed that about yourself. You've taken it in, you've made it make sense, and now you're struggling with something that was never yours. So these are a few of the tidbits I would go through with people who want to overcome their limiting beliefs, imposter syndrome.
Then it's so powerful what you're saying, and people might miss this. I really want to stress this. You might miss this. You're dropping some fire right now. And if people might want to go back and listen just to the little nuances of the words you're talking about, because it's really powerful. And I heard someone say this recently, and you're hitting on the same thing, is that you're not even your thoughts. The thoughts use you. You're just a vehicle for thought. We yeah. think so much that I'm the one who originated this. I created this. You didn't create shit. The universe is actually just creating everything. You're just agreeing and consenting to it. So I think we become so entrenched in like, this is my belief. This is who I believe. Your beliefs aren't anything. Like your beliefs, it's just a paradigm. And you can take on someone else's paradigm if you want. Maybe you should actually. Maybe it'll make you a lot better. I don't know. But I think we get so entrenched of like, it's my belief. And it becomes so personalized. And when you start to kind of detach and you're like, no, the thoughts are using me. You know, I'm just a vessel for it. Yeah, I think it can bring some relaxation and make success or the idea of achieving a success a little bit more relaxing.
Joel, how deep you usually like to go on your podcast with your listeners?
I mean, I only bring on the best and the guys that are most disruptive in the industry. So I wouldn't bring you on if unless I thought you were going to be disruptive and change some people's freaking paradigms here. So let's go as deep as you want.
Well, let's dive in further into what you just said. So here's another fun little exercise for your listeners. If you close your eyes just for a moment and you just observe thought, see what you observe, see what's in there, see if there's anything flowing around, see if you can actually grab a thought. Now, you go ahead and if you open your eyes and you just, Joel, I don't know if you observed a thought. If you want, you could tell me. Did you observe something?
No, I mean, honestly, I was just kind of picturing emptiness, nothingness, black.
Interesting.
Well, and then Joel's when you started walking me through the idea of grabbing a thought, then I started to visualize myself just grabbing an idea. And the word, the bubble that I saw was just the word belief. And I was like grabbing it in the ether.
Yeah, that's interesting. So for any of you listeners who might have, and Joel did grab a thought, which is great. But for any of you listeners who might have also grabbed a thought, there's something interesting. You cannot be the creator and the observer. So where did the thought come from? If you observed the thought, it clearly didn't come from you, because if you are the observer and you're not the creator, where did the thought come from? You have to understand that you are not your thoughts. You're not your emotions. You are someone who is experiencing those things, interpreting them, and then creating your life around them, depending on the life you would like to create. And people might turn around. Some of you listeners might even say, why? I'm not creating this. My life is not where I want it to be. It's being pushed upon me. And I would say you're incorrect. because nothing could be pushed upon you. We can only accept things or we can do something about it. You might have a circumstance you don't like, so you're either accepting that circumstance or you're perpetuating it. You're perpetuating it in your actions and your responses and the way you show up, in how you are reacting to it. There is no such thing as a situation being pushed upon you. There's only how you're going to interpret it. So if you go back to that, and you might say something like, for any of you listeners, I myself personally was diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and panic disorder when I was younger. I struggled a lot with suicidal ideation, and I struggled with self-harm tendencies. And it's interesting because I've come to learn you have to ditch your diagnosis. Your diagnosis is becoming a part of your identity. And so I would utilize that I knew I was depressed as a reason to stay in bed. I utilize the fact that I know I'm diagnosed with anxiety as to why I could cancel on people and not go out because I'm anxious. And it's very interesting because if you believe X, Y, and Z about life, you get X, Y, and Z in life. However, if you understand, well, I'm Vin, I may have an experience that invokes an emotion which is similar or is anxiety, that's okay. It tells me that I am experiencing this. I am not this. Learning to separate yourself from your emotions and your thoughts, because they are separate, is a major key to navigating life, because it puts you in the position to not be reactive, but be proactive. Because if you believe you're separate, you can look at it from almost a third party perspective and say, what can I do about this? Or what would I rather have in this moment? If you believe it's you, you're helpless because you're stuck in it. And now you're going to react to life because there's no separation. It's just you. And now you have to deal with this crap that is you, and good luck. So it's very important to understand that there is not a oneness in this universe. I mean, there is, but there isn't. There's a oneness to your source of God, universe, whatever you or your listeners might believe. But there is a separateness of all of that and the human experience, because it is separate.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you, I was wondering how you're going to caveat that, but yeah. Okay. That makes complete sense. I love that, dude. Whoa. That was deep, man. That was some deep stuff. I wanted to ask you just a selfish question, because sure. your daughter's, I think, a little bit over two. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're a relatively new parent, and you brought it up earlier in the conversation of mindful parenting. As a father who's always looking to sharpen his sword and be a better parent, be a better father, be a better husband, what's one of just the biggest lessons or takeaways that you've learned from parenting, and maybe that you've gained awareness from? Like you mentioned, awareness. And maybe look, if a listener, if anybody's listening right now, what would be like the biggest thing or the biggest shift that you would say to be a more mindful parent, you should do this?
This might go back to your initial point. And it may sound counterproductive in this current point. To some degree, be a very sad parent. Be a sad parent, because all of the moments that you're so madly in love with are going to end very, very quickly. Similar to the aspect of death. Whenever people die, what happens? We have a week. And then what? And then you see people that you haven't seen in God knows how long. And it's like, oh my God, we should connect. Life is too short. Being a parent in moments that are so amazing, that take your breath away every day, is so freaking short. And it's so sad to acknowledge that. I spend more time with my kid because I'm so sad about the fact that I know that these moments are going to end way sooner than I'd like them to. Like, it almost, like right now, it kind of brings a little bit of it. I'm holding it back, but it's bringing a little bit of a tear to my eye thinking about this, because it does suck. Like, don't get me wrong, I am so excited for everything I'm going to experience with my daughter. Like, I can't wait. She's going to be my best friend. We're going to do X. We're going to do Y. But it's also the thought of, like, she's not going to be this adorable little two-year-old. She's not going to do these things that I am so madly in love with right now. And if I sit here and I put business first, then I put income first, then I put networking first, then I put friends first, then it's like, it's okay, because, you know, I'm going to have this whole life with my daughter. then I'm going to undersell how amazing these moments are and really overestimate how much time I have. And I'm not going to have the awareness that these things are so freaking fleeting that I'm going to miss them like crazy. And so I use a little bit of sadness to actually enhance the amount of presence and joy I have with my daughter, because that sadness prompts me to remember, like, this is going to be gone very quickly. Don't you dare miss a moment of it.
Dude, bro, started getting me teared up, and I honestly wanted to walk out of my room, and you brought a level of presence back to me that just reminded me I need to go out, leave my room and go hug my kids. And thank you. And I think that's so crucial, this idea of death. And we talk about it all the time, and people have challenge coins and things that say memento mori, you know, this Latin phrase that death is coming, you know. Mm. And I had an interview on a podcast with these people. They wrote the book Experiential Billionaire, and basically saying, like, everybody wants to be a rich billionaire, but really what you want is rich experiences. And that's why they said experiential billionaire. Experiences will make you rich, not money. And they start off the book with exactly what you're saying. And it really hit home to me that they had, I think, 76 squares on a big board. And the 76 squares are the average of the American or United States in a lifespan. The average person is going to live, I think, to 76 or 72. I'm 41 years old. I'll be 42 next week. By that gauge, I got 30 years left, man. That ain't much. Now, believe me, I have an abundant mindset. I think I'll be living to 120, but we're just saying the averages, right? Like,
yeah.
And it really puts it in perspective, man. I've already lived half of my life in theory. What are you going to do, man? And what are you going to do in the next half, the second act of your life? Are you going to squander it? Like, maybe I've squandered some years away. Are you going to, like, go all into it and embrace those moments? And the last thing I'll say is that everybody always says, and I've heard this from everybody, oh, hug your kids. They grow up so fast. And it's one of those things that you just take for granted. You go, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the reality is, in the last 2 weeks, I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. And in general, they're homeschooled. So they're around us all the time. And it comes off sometimes needy. Dad, play with me. Dad, play with me. And I'm like, I'm busy. I will play with you, but I'm busy at the moment. In the last 2 weeks, my kids have been really embracing each other, and they've matured. There's been a leap. I've seen a growth leap. And they're playing harmoniously without me. And it happened overnight, Vin. It happened overnight. And so I can already see the transition of my 10-year-old pretty soon. He's already playing out with friends in the neighborhood. I'm going to be losing that time, and he's 10. So what you said is very sombering. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's important, right? Like, I talk about intention. The biggest thing that I like to think that I teach people is intention, presence, identity creation, because those are so important. Like, on my, and we'll talk about this later, is like on my mission board, which is the free resource I have for everybody. But on my mission board, I have a photo of, so my daughter is half white, half Asian. More appropriately, she's half Italian, half Korean. So I Googled white / Asian girl mix in like her early 20s. And I found a random photo of this girl that I think maybe my daughter might look like in the future. Maybe. We'll see. I mean, I got the photo. We'll see in 20 years from now. But I put it on there because when people think about creating a vision board, or in my case, a mission board, they think about, like, okay, let me get the car, let me get the house, let me get the big bank account. Like, it's always about the material things, I feel. Or a lot of the times, it's about the material things.
1,000%.
But here's an interesting idea, right? How do you want your children to grow up? Because the way your children is going to grow up is actually dependent on the kind of parent, and for us, Joel, the kind of fathers we are. So when I have this photo up of my daughter here, and it says, Sage is a beautiful and ambitious young woman. She is known as loving, wise, empowered, and free. What kind of a man or what kind of a father must I become to make that piece of my board become a reality? And so the reason that that's there is because it's a challenge for me. Like, everything else is a challenge for me. I do have the car and the house. I want those things too. And that's going to require me to become someone in business. but this one's going to require me to become someone as a man and a father. And so when we talk about like, how do you really create these relationships with your kids? It's really just about knowing how do you have to show up, because I guarantee your kids want the best relationships they could possibly have with you. Your kids are going to want to play with you. They're going to want time with you. Anybody who's a parent that tells me their kid doesn't bother them, I'm going to hate to say it, but I'm going to have to ask you, how non-present were you that they don't bother with you?
Dude, what you're hitting on is crucial. And the thing I'll say to that, I just had a coaching call with one of my clients, and the call started off. I said, "Hey, how's things going? How are you?" He said, "Ah, great. I'm a lazy piece of shit." And I said, "Okay." That was how the call started. And then I said, "Hey, what do you want to work on this week?" And he said, "Well, I really want to work on my kids and discipline, and they're not following through with their chores." I said, "Okay, cool." I said, "Well, let me start off by saying," I said, "I'm going to give you at the end of this call some tactics and strategies, because I know as guys we like the what are the things strategically we can start implementing." But I said, "You know, I'm going to go here." I said, "Every time I got to go to the root cause." I said, "You started this call off by telling me you're a lazy piece of shit. What example are you sending to the family? What are the values and the mission that you're leading this family into? You want them to do these things, but I'm guessing you're not embodying discipline. You're not embodying follow through because you're not even doing it. You said you're lazy. How can you expect your kids to be lazy? I mean, to be actually hard workers."
Right.
And that, I think that rocked them. So you got to be, baby. You got to be that person first. And that's such a good one to have. I think I don't have that. I'm going to start implementing that with the, because it really brings back, who do I need to be for them to be? And that is key, Vin. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, and so, well, Joel, you know, because you listened to my speech. That's how we met, is at VCon. And I talk about the five aspects of self-mastery. And then I talk about internal leadership. And internal leadership is that way that I help people understand their identities, because everything comes down to that. We all have these multiple identities within us. Like, you're a father, you're a son, you're a husband, you're an entrepreneur. Those are four identities right there. And now you have, and I'm sure you have others, right? Like, you're a friend, there's five. I'm sure you might even have a few other things you do which give you more identities. But if we even go with those five, each one of those five has an empowering way to show up. So this is something we don't do often, and I'm sure your listeners could probably benefit from doing this too. Write down your identities, all of them. Doesn't matter how many there are. You could have 20 identities. I don't care. Write down every single identity you have. From there, ask yourself, what is the most empowered version of this identity look like? Like, if we use the father identity, right? If you want to be a good father, what would you consider that to be? Is the father present? Is the father loving? Is the father empathetic? Is he a leader? Is he a teacher? Is he a friend? Is he a mentor? How does he show up to support his children? Does he allow them to fail? Does he allow them to learn? You know, all of these different things. And don't get me wrong, like, you finish this exercise, anyone listening, you finish this exercise, your paper is going to be filled. Like, you're going to have just freaking branches of branches of branches of how do you show up powerfully in one identity and then do that for every identity. Your paper is full. But then, now that you have the awareness, this jumps into the law of exposure. This also activates another part of your brain called the reticular activating system, which makes us hypersensitive and hyper aware to the things that we want, which is probably going to be that empowered identity. Now, the law of exposure is also interesting, because the law of exposure is a law of the universe that talks about how once you're exposed to a piece of information that can transform and change your life, you can never be unexposed to it. Which means, with your conscious awareness of what the most empowered version of you is, you can't deny that. You would either have to acknowledge, like, maybe your client, like, you're being a lazy piece of crap because you know what the best version of you is and you're not reaching it, or you utilize this information to change your life. But now you might be like, "Vin, how can I really utilize this information to change my life? I have the identity, but I don't know how to step into it." Well, I got you, friend. That's the five aspects of self-mastery. The only five things you can control in this entire universe. And if you find a sixth, please email me, because then I need to change my concept. But the only five I know is that you can only control your thoughts, your language, your behaviors, your actions, and your emotions. So once you understand the empowered identity, you then say, how can I utilize, or what do I need to do with these five so that I can build this identity every single day? And now what we're talking about is the scientific version of manifestation, because you don't need to do something out in the external world to get a result. You need to become something in the internal world. Because the internal world is just a reflection, or sorry, your external world is just a reflection of your internal. So as long as you become the most empowered version of you through utilizing your five aspects of mastery, knowing your identity, and you become that, now your world reflects that. So you want to become, I don't know, a high value individual that makes $1 million a year. You just have to figure out what is the service, the product. How often do you need to sell it? How much do you need to do? What's the price point? All of these things in the internal world. What's that entrepreneur that you must become? And then as you become that and you start selling the service or the product or doing the thing, you turn around, there's $1 million in your bank account. It sounds a lot more simple than it is, right? But it actually is that simple. It's just the nuances make it complex. Like, you'll probably have to spend time figuring out marketing. You'll have to spend time building your brand. You'll have to spend time figuring out the ups and downs of your industry. You'll have to figure out your competition. You'll have to niche in and figure out your avatar and your audience and all this stuff. And those are the nuances, right? But each thing, as you figure those out, you're becoming a more capable entrepreneur. The more capable entrepreneur gets to the levels that generates the million. Once you generate the million, you have the million. Like, now you're a millionaire. You're a high value millionaire entrepreneur, which is who you became, which is why you have a million in your bank account. And I use that because it's a super tangible example, because we think of money in dollars, like numbers are tangible. But that's the same concept if you want to be a great father or an amazing husband or a phenomenal friend. These transcend, because it's just the power of building yourself to get the results you're looking for.
Yeah, man. Let's go. I'm fired up. I know we both got to go and we got to wrap things up. Dude, I'm going to bring you back on for a second. We got to do a round two. So I might have to bring you on every couple of years. I hope you don't mind.
Let's go.
But dude, talk to us about where people can find you, learn more about you either on social media or just connect with you if they want to work with you.
Sure. You can find me on my Instagram is vin.infante. TikTok is similar. And LinkedIn is Vin Infante as well. I try to keep all the socials together. I mean, I'm on all of it. I'm on Twitter, and I don't really do too much on YouTube yet, but we'll get there. And you could also go check out my website. It's www.vincentinfante.life. It's just my name.life. And there's a bunch of free resources on there. I'd love for you all to check it out. I was talking about it before. My free resource is called the Mission Board, and it's like a vision board, but it's better for two reasons. Is one, because I made it, and number two, because of the fact that it really challenges you to be super intentional with your life. My goal with people on this planet is to help them become more intentional. And so download your Mission Board resource, go get it. It's phenomenal. It'll prompt you how to build it, what to put on there, and it will really dive deep into challenging you every day to hit your goals. And the other two things that I have for you is a newsletter subscription. I do it twice a month. It's all about personal development. I hope to see you on that list. And so I could come to your door every month, twice a month, and just tell you a thing that can enhance your life. I always give a personal story and then a lesson learned and what you could utilize to change your life from there. And then lastly, for anybody who is interested in diving deeper in anything I've said today, I invite you to book a free call with me. It's called the strategy session. You could also find that on my website. We can chop it up for about an hour and see if there's anything I may or may not be able to help you with. And then if I can't help you, go tell Joel that I suck and you're mad that he promoted me.
That would never happen. I do the same thing. And I say, hey, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to send you and point you in the right direction. Cause I know, and I got a network of people. Someone can help you. I promise. So I think we're both aligned in that. Dude, I love that. The only thing I was going to say is the mission board I can download, but do you have a physical product? I think that'd be a really cool idea, if not to eventually, not that you need this, but to have a journal of some sort or to have like actual whiteboard mission boards that I could hang up. I thought that'd be really, really neat. Anyways, if not, yeah, let's get that going.
It's an idea for the future. I actually have been in the process of making a journal for a little bit, but I've been tweaking it, and the feedback I get is always like, hey, you could do this better. So I'm just in the state of constantly trying to improve it. As far as a board, I don't have that yet. That's more of a DIY type of deal. But yeah, man, in the future, definitely some products and stuff.
Yeah. Ben Infante, love you, brother. Thanks for being on the show, and I'll have you back on real soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.